Hi everyone. So a few weeks ago, we asked the community to send us their questions for our founder, Jun von Techner. We've managed to get some answers for you at a recent team meetup. One of our community members, Bruce Hamilton, also known as iSpy, sat down with Jun and relayed your questions and got some answers on all things Vivaldi. This is the second half of the conversation, so if you've missed the first bit, maybe go back and have a listen to that. But otherwise, enjoy.
Here's an extremely general question. What is the company's business model? How does Vivaldi earn its share? I'm having in the back of my mind the memory that opera was once sold to investors and then things changed. So if Vivaldi wants to remain independent in the long run, I want to know how they sustain themselves. And this same question, very similar question, was asked in relation to having a Vivaldi email account. Person wants to know that Vivaldi is going to be around forever so that they can give everyone their new email address.
These are really good questions, and I think it's really important to explain. In some ways, we have to say a few words about what happened at Opera and the like. And what happened at Opera, obviously, I mean, I was the co-founder and we took the company forward, and then we went public, and the reality, we got some really bad investors in at one stage. I won't go into the details of that, but it meant that there was a bit of a battle, and it ended up of having fights with the investors for certain levels of the investors for a long time. I ended up quitting. So that's kind of the short story. What that means is when we were then starting Vivaldi, the thinking is we don't want any other investors. Mm-hmm. So there are no other investors. I mean, it's basically us. Basically, it's all the employees have shares. That's okay. How. But the funding is coming from me. So I'm the only investor putting actual cash into the company. But everyone has ownership. Okay. And that's how we want to keep it. We don't want to go public. We don't want to get investors. It's not like we don't get a lot of calls about that. There's plenty of investors that want to give us money, and that's nice. Then we would have to provide them with an exit. Mm-hmm. And that would mean either going public or selling the company, none of which we want to do. So we want to build the company. And the idea is that we get as many browser users as we can. And the business model, I'll get back to that. I mean, that's how we then pay for all the other services as well. Free email accounts and community sites and the like. So we're trying to do everything on a shoestring, but still providing great services. But there's never part of this selling user data or anything like that. So mail account, and there's no ads, there's no nothing. This is just something that we want to do in providing services to our friends. We're hoping we get enough users that we can be profitable. At this time, we're not. We need a few more million users before we are. But we are getting there, and the progress is coming nicely. The model is really simple. We include some search engines, and some of the bookmarks we include do generate revenue for us. So only if you use them.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, we include an eBay or a booking.com. If you use those services through Vivaldi, you select those bookmarks.
So the routing to the destination is encoded into the bookmark.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we have a bookmark there, which if you click it, identifies. And that's a common thing. I mean, this is something that the other browsers do as well. Mm-hmm. Now, the revenue calculation we are doing per user per year, we are looking at a dollar per user per year as a inside our model.
Yes.
So it's not a lot of money, obviously. Again, if we were selling user data, we would be making a lot more. But that's not our business. That's not what we want to do. Uh-huh. And obviously, we're building a browser for friends, and we do not want to spy on our friends or share data about them or anything like that. That's not what this is about.
Yes.
So we're building this out of passion. We want to make a difference, and we want to build a great product for our users. And we think we can do that with the model that we have. Again, it's just a question of getting enough users to pay the bills, and then we can continue grow from there.
A question that spins right off of that then, users who are anxious about the future of Vivaldi and seeing it last forever, what can individual users do to contribute?
The most important thing people can do is tell their friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, the revenue per user is there. Right? So the model is working. Our revenue per user is gradually increasing. We're almost at a dollar now per user per year on average. And we think we can maybe get a little bit more, because gradually as we get more users, we get better deals and things like that.
Yes.
But mostly it's really a question of then getting more users. So it's all the focus is for us is getting the user base. And the way we do it on our side is listening to our users and providing more features. And then our users are helping us. And the more they do that, the better. Tell their friends, help their families install them, those kind of things.
Right. The answer to this seems relatively obvious, but I'll ask it anyway. Is Vivaldi financially independent? If not, how many more users do you need to make it?
So we still need a bit more users to be profitable. We are independent from the perspective that there is no other investors than ourselves.
Yes.
But well, we are about a million now. Mm-hmm. We do need between 3 and 5 to be profitable.
Okay. And this was actually one of my questions. It sounds a little technical, I'm afraid. If you were to graph a trend line of numbers of Vivaldi usership, do you see a point in time where that line intersects financial self-sufficiency? If so, are you satisfied with that point in time, or do you feel it must move closer?
I always want things to happen as quickly as possible. I mean, we do the calculation, and based on the calculations, we'll get there, right?
And be able to survive long enough to get there.
Yes, and I mean, obviously our burn rate is lowering as we get more users, right? We're getting more users, our burn rate is lowering, and then at the time we'll be profitable.
Yes. Now, burn rate is cash going out the door, not coming back.
Basically. We are working on important features that we know our users want, and we do hope that those provide bigger jumps in usage. Things like synchronization, which has been the top item for a lot of our users. Things like the mail client and the mobile client and various others. And obviously we'd like to see these out of the door as soon as possible, but they need to be of the quality that people would expect from us. So that's something that's ongoing. But I mean, the calculation is there, and it's just a question of, I mean, as long as we're keeping the current growth rate, we will get, and then I don't know how far we can take it from there, but I actually think we have a really good product for a lot of people, and I hope a lot of people will try it out and like it. We are seeing that if people just try it, a lot of them really do like it as well, but they need to understand what's different and they like it. So we're working on that as well. Mm-hmm. How can we show off the features? Because if you just download, you might not see all the features and the like. So how do we get you to find the features that are meaningful for you? And that's not always the same.
Right, both discoverability and PR.
Most importantly, I mean, it is about word of mouth, right? Mm-hmm. And so we don't have the kind of financing that our competitors have, right?
Right.
Yes, we do PR and the PR works, but a lot of it is really about do people show their friends what we are about? And if they do, we know that that's the best way to get users, that someone shows them the features that we have and shows them why they've chosen us or even why they think their friends should be using Vivaldi because it solves certain problems for them.
Very well. And when do you intend to fully open source the Vivaldi browser? Don't you agree that trust toward the browser and the whole company is based on transparency and source code audits? How can I trust the Vivaldi browser if I cannot review the code nor be sure that the browser is clearly doing something it should not?
Now, the interesting thing here is actually you can do that because our code actually, all the C++ code that is written, I mean the compiled code, mm-hmm. is actually available. We make code drops and you can go and have a look at them, right?
Yes.
The rest of the code is HTML. That's also accessible. If you're a programmer and you know what you're doing, you can have a look at that code and you can look at it. Now, the thing that we are kind of missing on the HTML side is a license that says you can do with the code whatever you like.
Yes.
So it's more of a licensing question than the, again, all the C++ code, the code is in two groups, C++ and HTML. Mm-hmm. The C++ code that we provide is available, any change that we do is available on really nice licenses. So you have that. The HTML code, we haven't provided a license on that, but people still go in, they read it, they check it, they improve it for themselves, they post patches on our community side. So you can already look at the code. So from that perspective, we are open. Will we provide another license in the future? That remains to be seen. There's plenty of discussions on this in the company.
Yes.
What is the right thing? That's difficult to know. If people seem to think that this is something magical, it's not. And again, I mean, we are already almost there. So I feel when someone says, why, well, you will be open source, for that purpose that the gentleman is mentioning, I think we are already.
And the other question that another user asked is the licensing question. You know, when do you plan to make Vivaldi giveaway? Anyone can do anything they want with it.
And again, this is a question of kind of what license should we then provide and the like. So there's an ongoing discussion, and there's very different opinions on this inside the company. I think as a company, we are more open than I think just about anyone. I mean, we have a really open process. We have people like yourself that actually have insights to what we're doing at any one time. And with our community, they see what we are doing at any one time. I mean, we're not necessarily giving them exact roadmaps or things like that, but in some ways that's also because we don't have as much details on our roadmap as they seem to think that we do.
Yes.
And also because we like to actually have the flexibility to work in a way which is the most efficient without having to say, okay, you have to do this because you put that on the list that this right. would be next. Some people talk about the term open source way of working. Mm-hmm. They've used that term, and I think in that way we are really, I mean, I think we're more open than almost anyone.
Right. Questions about the community. Do you have plans to strengthen the feedback loop with community somehow? Are you considering publication of some kind of list with goals to achieve?
Well, I think I'd like to explain that a little bit, because people seem to think that we're holding back on something. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to look inside the organization, we don't have, I mean, we have a lot of things that we are saying, these are priorities and the like, but it's a question, I mean, we're a small team, and it's really a question of having the right person for the right task, and some of these things take a bit of time. Anyone that's done programming knows that context switching is really bad for you. You want yes. to stay on task, and I mean, there are differences between people also there. I mean, some people like the context switching, some people, if you make them context switch, they go, It basically makes their life miserable, right? Mm-hmm. So we are trying to find, because part of this is when we're working on this, we want everyone to be working on this, enjoying their work. And part of that is being able also to have an influence on what they take as a priority and which tasks they work on. Yeah. I wouldn't like to have someone do something when they would prefer to do this. Mm-hmm. I think they'll enjoy and work a lot better if they're doing things that they enjoy. I just want them to enjoy their work also.
Yeah.
So these lists are not that helpful. I mean, we have been quite open about the big things that we're working on. We are working right. on Sync, we're working on Mail, we're working on Calendar, we've been working on the kind of upgrade of the code, which has been speeding up and simplifying the organization of the code. And there's a few other things. I mean, we have a lot of this just looking at the list that people have and, okay, is there something we can get quickly in and things like that? And we look at that based on the priority of the user. So there's a lot of these concurrent processes that are happening, but it's not necessarily all just structured. And again, we just feel that that's a way of working, makes things work more innovative. Again, if someone has an idea, we can just go and do it.
I think sometimes people confuse software development with something along the lines of construction, where you have blueprints and you have due dates and you have the ultimate design of the building is essentially written in stone. And everyone knows when things are going to happen and who's going to be on site when and all this sort of thing. When the development of this particular product is really nothing like that. You can't tell the community exactly what you're going to be doing 9 months from now, because in many ways you have no idea.
You have no idea. I mean, it's also, I mean, you mentioned there are different ways to do things. There's waterfall, right, which mm-hmm. is more like the traditional design. You take one step and another. And we may, inside certain sub-projects, methods like this may have been seen, but a lot of it is rapid prototyping, kind of where we do things, we get feedback, we improve. That's a way of working which works really well for us. And obviously we also have the fact that we're working on top of Chromium, which is a moving target. Exactly. So we better keep that in mind as well. And we're actually spending a fair amount of time just dealing with that. And we have really smart people that are working on it. And it's a really complex task just to maintain that. But we are managing to do that. But the complexity of all these things means that we don't necessarily always know exactly when things will be done. And in some ways, it's done when it's done.
Right.
If you say it will be ready in a month, and if it's not ready, what do you do then?
If you were building a building and the geology and geography of the building site were continually changing, couldn't use the same blueprints this week that you had last week.
Basically.
Do you intend to come to Brazil to some tech event such as Campus Party to show Vivaldi to more Brazilians. This user remembers when you were in opera and the company were at the campus party showing the browser. He even participated in an online campaign to promote it.
Anywhere we have users, we'd like to go out and meet with them. And we've been doing these events in other places, not in Brazil so far, but obviously that's on our list. So it's a question of, in some ways, getting invitations regards to, I mean, typically we try to combine things, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the events that I'm going to, they're maybe computer events or startup events or the like. And then we combine that with a user gathering in the same location, and we try to combine things like that. And so it's a question of, typically it starts with, we get an invitation for some event, and then we combine other things while we're there.
Got it. About the future. Without revealing anything dangerous, can you tell us what is the next big thing for Vivaldi? I'd love to think there's some ultra-innovative space where a browser could come and disrupt maybe payments, maybe newsreader, coding environment. And by payments, I'm sure they're talking about something like a Square-type product, you know, where the browser can actually negotiate payments. Anything revolutionary that you have in mind?
Obviously, already with regards to how we make the browser, we're doing things out of the ordinary, that we're building the browser using web technology on the top, which means that we develop cross-platform in an efficient manner using actually the tools that we're building on top of.
Yes.
So, I mean, already that is special. Now, people know about the things that we are focusing on in particular now, which is things like sync and mail and the like, the mobile version. But there's plenty of other things which we have on our long list of ideas. I mean, things relating to privacy, to be able to function more peer-to-peer and the like. I mean, those are things that we think are important. But we don't want to say everything that we are doing from that perspective. Some of those ideas we may also change.
Yes. Does Vivaldi plan to have its own extension store?
At this time, we feel that it's right just to work. I mean, given that we work with most of the extensions for Chrome, that kind of makes sense. And there's a question of, is it worth the complexity to work on our own? I mean, a lot of it would basically be contacting those vendors that provide extensions for Chrome and just getting them to put it into our store. I mean, it's been discussed, but it's not probably the highest item on our list right now. There's just so many other tasks to do.
How about sharing platforms that are exclusive to Vivaldi, like Vivaldi Themes?
The idea of being able to share your setups. I mean, we talked about the ability to go and change how Vivaldi looks to a much greater extent. And then obviously you'd like to share those extensions, or should we say that experience with your friends. And that's on our list, to be able to share your setups with friends or through the community and the like. So we'll get there as well. That's on our list. We know being able to customize the browser, even greater extent, is extremely high on people's lists.
Okay. This user asked a question using a term that is actually somewhat controversial, which is the term power user. Everyone thinks they know what it means, and it means something different to everyone. But he says, Jan, how do you think the needs of power users have changed, if at all, through time? Let's talk about some particular dates, say from 2000 to 2012, and maybe even try to predict what you think such users would expect from a browser, say 5 years from now.
I agree. I mean, what is a power user? Basically, what we are trying to do is to provide the flexibility to get you what you want to do, right? Obviously, if you're an advanced user and you're spending a lot of time on the internet, the likelihood of you wanting to learn a few tricks to be able to work more efficiently, or that we adapt to your requirements, is clearly something that's important. It's just the flexibility to adapt to your requirements on the systems that are available. And we've done quite a lot of work to do that. We did that in the past, and we'll continue to do that, to adapt to your requirements, the input methods that are available. That has changed somewhat, what input methods are available. But I mean, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of similarity still. A browser is a browser. It views the same kind of content. The content is more complicated, more feature-rich. But in a lot of ways, it's still doing the same basic thing. So it's a question of how do you organize the data, how do you provide different ways to do things so your input methods of choice are available to you and things like that. So we'll see where that leads us, but it's basically based on what people are asking us to do.
Okay. What is your end goal with this browser? Why are you doing what you do? What drives you to keep doing it?
There is a need. Again, this started in many ways with all those people that were using Opera and were unhappy with the direction where that company was going. And I was in the same situation. I was contacting my friends at Opera and saying, come on, guys, when are the features coming back? Realizing the answer was really never. And the basic design philosophy of adapting to the user. So we just want to build great products for our end users. We'll continue to evolve what that is, right? Mm-hmm. We're not saying a browser today is what the browser is tomorrow. We'll add more functionality both into the browser and functionality on the server side. I mean, people mm-hmm. mentioned things like Turbo. That is a server-side functionality, so it would require something there. So we'll continue to evolve technology there. But, I mean, it's really about building great product. Obviously, we want to get enough users, so it's paying the bills. That's mm-hmm. important. But this is not really a money-driven project. This is about building great products and providing our users with the best possible products.
I get the sense that you derive an actual personal satisfaction out of providing something that not only you felt you needed, but you feel many people in general need.
Building something which people are happy with is fantastic. And this applies to all of us. I mean, I know the guys, they love going in there, seeing questions and comments from people, taking those and actually acting on them quickly and being able to then relay back, okay, we listened to you, we did this. This is an important thing that we're listening to people. And I think, I mean, anyone that's working with customers and actually enjoys it likes having happy customers. And I have to admit, I mean, that's really important to us. I mean, that people like what we are doing, that they're enjoying our software, that we're getting the feedback, what can we improve, what can we do better, and we try as well as we can to do just that, to improve every day.
Personal and irrelevant to Vivaldi questions. User wants to know, what is your favorite Japanese food apart from sushi? What do you like about Japan?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. He took it, I mean, saying besides sushi. And the thing is, I do enjoy sushi quite a lot. When celebrating, quite often we'll have sushi around here. Mm-hmm. Not everyone likes sushi, so there's some people will have something else, but I'll have my sushi. But I like a lot of the Japanese food, to be frank. I mean, things like sukiyaki. I like my friend from Japan will talk about the fact that Korean barbecue is not only Korean, it's also from southern Japan. I like things like their curries, even their burgers, like their Mos burger and the like, which has rice kind of on the top and bottom, and then it has kind of chicken and teriyaki. So, I mean, it's different. There's a lot of good food in Japan, and I like the fact that they focus on the details there, and quite a, you sense there's a lot of pride in the food that they're making. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy going to Japan. My favorite thing to go there and do there is to go to Akihabara, which is the electronic city. And there's just basically a lot of electronics and a lot of different stores selling new stuff. And then what I kind of like is there's a lot of stores that are also then specializing in the way they have old things. And the way they've treated those, that they are actually taken care of. When you're buying a used camera or something like that, or a used computer, mm-hmm. it will be spotless. I mean, it's really shiny, and they take care of their things, which is nice. I appreciate that in Japan.
Very well. Do you watch TV?
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. User wants to know, what's your favorite TV series or movies? Any recommendations?
I have to admit, I mean, I'm into sports and the like, so I'll watch a bit of soccer, football, mm-hmm. and the rest of the world. And I enjoy, now that I moved here to Magnolia, I mean, I'm watching the basketball with Celtics.
Yes.
I enjoy that. Then I do follow quite a lot of news. I try to stay on top of things with regards to what's happening in the world, trying to get it from as many sources as possible, which I think is important. Different news sources in different countries and the like, just to see if there's a difference in the presentation of the information from the different sources. I think that's actually quite important. When it comes to movies and films and the like, I mean, I'm a tech, so I mean, science fiction and the like would clearly, I enjoy the new Star Wars movie, the new Star Trek movie, Stargate series. So you'll find a bit of that, but I can also enjoy a good kind of, a good comedy, a good kind of spy story, or I guess like a lot of people, I do like a lot of different things there. Even some series, but I guess I prefer them normally to have a little bit kind of a heavier content in some ways.
Have you bought a Tesla yet?
No, not yet. And I feel embarrassed in many ways to answer that question. I would like to say that I was being a good citizen and getting an electric car. When I moved here to the United States, I did get some more typical cars that you have around here. I really like them. And I also have a car in Iceland, one of those. That's the Icelandic thing with 38-inch wheels and the like, and which is nice for driving out in the nature and the like. I do hope to rectify that question sometime in the future. I do like the fact that they're getting one at a more reasonable price.
Yes, and if I could somehow swing it, I think I'd love to have one. I don't see it in my future.
It's getting there. And what I'm really excited about, if you look at also that a lot of the other car manufacturers are following into this, and that you'll see a lot of the car manufacturers seemingly coming with a lot of cars that are electric in the next 2-3 years. And clearly this is important that we deal with global warming and just the pollution. I mean, in many cities, the pollution is terrible. And if you took away what comes out of the cars, you would reduce that very significantly.
I understand that a couple of car makers are actually looking, at least they're saying at this point, they're looking to go zero emissions within the decade.
I think this just might be happening now, that we are at a point where things are changing quite dramatically, both with regards to going electric, with regards to the automatic driving functions that are getting into cars now. There's just a lot of them, and I think I'm hoping that this will continue, because I think it will save a lot of lives. I mean, a lot of people are die in traffic every year. Mm. So having these tools to help us avoid that, I think is really, really important.
Excellent. And the most important question of all so far, what is your favorite ice cream flavor and how popular is ice cream in Iceland?
You know where the name Iceland comes from, right?
I really don't.
Now, obviously, it has something to do with ice cream, right? Now, there's a lot of ice cream in Iceland. It's kind of a tradition. It's a long tradition in Iceland to have a lot of ice cream and eat it all year. It's quite fascinating. But on the other hand, then we go in the hot springs afterwards or before. I mean, you go in the hot springs and then you go and have an ice cream. Obviously, I would prefer my own. I am an investor in a company that makes ice cream, a dairy company called Ayrna that makes lactose-free milk products. So if you go to Iceland, you have to try out the dairy products, and you should go to we have a little cafe in Seltjarnarnes where we have the Vivaldi office and the Innovation House. And then there you'll be able to have the cafe latte and you'll be able to have ice creams. My personal preference is like the vanilla ice cream with chocolate on top of it, which is really good. But then they have something called Bragðarefur, which is where you take ice cream and you just mix in a lot of things into it. So you're taking basically soft serve ice cream and you mix that with whatever you would like to have in it. I'm kind of like a lot of Icelandic people. I do like the combination of licorice and chocolate. So if you combine those maybe with some other things, you're getting a treat. One of the nice things about this, if you happen to be lactose intolerant, you'll be able to have all of that at my cafe.
Okay then. I think I've asked everything that the users had and a couple of things that I had, and I know that I certainly appreciate the opportunity to have the discussion, and I hope everyone else appreciates getting their questions answered.
Well, thanks for doing this, and this has been a lot of fun, and thanks for everything that you do, and I'd like to thank everyone in the community as well. This support that we get from you and from everyone else, I mean, that's what drives us. That's what makes this a lot of fun for us. I mean, we get these questions, and I don't know if people understand how important this is to us, that there are so many people that like what we're doing and are actually helping us get things done. We couldn't do this without you, without your help. And
I'm happy to do it. My motivations are 50-50. I am dead set to one day have a browser I can use again, and it optimizes my workflow. And at the same time, I just kind of feel driven to help people when I can and in the ways I can. So if I'm able to be of some assistance, it's more than my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Head to vivaldi.com to download the latest version of the Vivaldi browser and get our latest news. Bye for now.